Mikoyan's son, Sergo, now 18, was engaged to Kuznetsov's daughter, Alla. When her father fell, Alla gave Sergo the chance to avoid marrying an outcast. But he loved her, and his parents had come to adore her like our own daughter. Mikoyan supported the marriage. "Have you gone crazy?" the pusillanimous Kaganovich whispered to Mikoyan. "Stop the marriage." Mikoyan was adamant. On the 15th of February, 1949, Kuznetsov was sacked as party secretary and accused of non-Bolshevik deviation and anti-state separatism. 3 days later, the couple got married. Mikoyan gave them a party at Jubalova. But Kuznetsov, finally realizing his plight, telephoned to say he could not come because he had an upset stomach. Mikoyan would not hear of it. "It's indecent for a father to miss his daughter's wedding," said Mikoyan, who sent his limousine. At the party, Kuznetsov could not relax. He felt he was endangering his daughter. "I feel unwell," he said. "So let's drink to our children." Then he left. That dangerous spring, poor Kuznetsov attended another Politburo marriage that involved the beleaguered Zhdanov faction, the wedding of Yuri Zhdanov and Svetlana. "My second marriage was the choice of my father," explained Svetlana, "and I was tired of struggling, so went through with it." The Generalissimo did not attend the wedding party at the Zhdanov's dacha. It was natural that Kuznetsov was there because he had been Zhdanov's closest ally, but everyone knew he was under a cloud. "Yuri sensed the Leningrad affair was undoubtedly aimed at my father, but I wasn't afraid then. I discovered later I should have been destroyed." He was right. The prisoners were later tortured to implicate the dead Zhdanov. On the 13th of August, Kuznetsov was summoned to Malenkov's office. "I'll be back," he told his wife and son Valery. "Don't start supper without me." The boy watched him head towards the Kremlin. He turned and waved at me. It was the last time I ever saw him. Yet Stalin hesitated over Voznesensky, but eventually he was arrested in a sweep of Zhdanovites joining Kuznetsov and 214 other prisoners who were tortured in a frenzy of French wrestling. Brothers, wives, and children followed them into the maw of Abakumov's MGB. Kuznetsov was thrashed so badly his eardrums were perforated. By the time Kuznetsov's daughter Alla and her new husband Sergo Mikoyan rushed back from their honeymoon, her father had already been beaten into a signed confession. Anastas Mikoyan received his daughter-in-law in his Kremlin study. "It was very hard for me to speak to Alla," wrote Mikoyan. "Of course I had to tell her the official version." The Leningrad case was not Beria's only success. Just after Kuznetsov's arrest in late August 1949, Beria set out in a special armored train for a secret nuclear settlement amidst the Kazakh steppes. He was frantic with worry, because if things went wrong, we would, as one of his managers put it, all have to give an answer before the people. Beria and the scientists observed, at a distance of 10 kilometers from the command post with its control panel and telephones to Moscow, all behind an earthen wall to deflect the shockwave. Professor Kurchatov ordered detonation. There was a bright flash. After the shockwave had passed, they hurried outside to admire the mushroom cloud rising majestically before them. Beria was wildly excited and kissed Kurchatov on the forehead, but he kept asking, "Did it look like the American one? We didn't screw up. Kurchatov isn't pulling our leg, is he?" He was very relieved to hear that the destruction of the site was apocalyptic, and hurried to the telephone, to be the first to ring Stalin. But Stalin replied, crushingly, that he already knew, and hung up. Beria punched the general who had dared tell Stalin first. "You've put a spoke in my wheel, traitor. I'll grind you to pulp." But he was hugely proud of his colossal achievement. 4 years after Hiroshima, Stalin had the bomb. Beria had another reason to be happy. He had met his last great love, 14-year-old Lilia, a Russian beauty with long blonde plaits. He was entranced. Her mother wanted all the benefits: flat, car, dacha. Beria set her up in style. Beria and Malenkov were riding high, but it turned out that someone else would benefit most from the power vacuum left by the Leningraders. Stalin summoned Khrushchev from Kiev. "I couldn't help but feel anxious," Khrushchev admitted. He had governed the Ukraine since 1938, ruthlessly purging the kulaks before the war, crushing the Ukrainian nationalists, and in February 1948 organizing the expulsion of harmful elements from villages. Almost 1 million were arrested on Khrushchev's initiative, a colossal crime which approached the deportation of the kulaks in brutality and scale. Small wonder that in retirement he reflected, "I'm up to my elbows in blood." Stalin appointed Khrushchev CC secretary and Moscow boss, but confided, "Things aren't going very well. We've exposed a conspiracy in Leningrad, and Moscow's teeming with anti-party elements." He wanted Khrushchev to check it out. As the Leningrad case showed, the system encouraged terror entrepreneurialism. The magnates could either douse a case or inflame it into a massacre. It was then up to Stalin to decide whether to protect the victims, save the evidence for later, or slaughter them immediately. "It's the work of a provocateur," Khrushchev replied. Stalin accepted his judgment and placed him in charge of agriculture. Having destroyed the Leningrad connection and undermined Molotov and Mikoyan, Beria and Malenkov were perfectly placed for the succession. Khrushchev was recalled to balance their power. On the 5th of September, Stalin began his holiday in Sochi, where Beria joined him for a barbecue to celebrate the bomb, which, along with the destruction of the Leningraders, had temporarily returned him to favor. But it would not last. Stalin's distrust of the men around him was now overwhelming. Stalin mused about the new world order to his young confidant, Mugyeladze. If war broke out, the use of A-bombs would depend on Truman's and Hitler's being in power. The people won't allow such men to be in power. Atomic weapons can hardly be used without spelling the end of the world. He was thinking more and more about Nadia. Walking in the gardens with Mugyeladze, Stalin lamented his disasters as a parent. First, there was Yasha. Fate treated Yakov badly, but he died a hero, he said. Vasily was an alcoholic. He does nothing but drinks a lot. Then Svetlana, his feminine alter ego, does whatever she wants. If her mother had raised her, she'd be more disciplined. You understand, there was always too much pressure on me, no time for the children. Sometimes I didn't see them for months. The kids didn't get lucky. Oh, Nadia, Nadia. Comrade, I ask you not to say a word about what you've heard. Mugyeladze had never seen Stalin so sad.